From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman reporting. Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives facing a Friday night deadline to approve funding to keep the government open rallied enough votes within their own party to pass the bill. That happened late Thursday, and it now faces a tough fight in the U.S. Senate. Speaker Paul Ryan is the top Republican in the House.
It is risky. It is reckless. And it is wrong. I ask the American people to understand this. The only people standing in the way of keeping the government open are Senate Democrats.
Democratic Party Representative Adam Schiff speaks about the lack of communication between the White House and the congressional Republican leadership over the spending measure.
There's little discussion coordination between the president and the GOP leadership here. And it's hard to negotiate when there's a moving target, when the president doesn't know his own mind, or is moved in one direction or another, depending on the last person he talked to.
Lawmakers have two options: either agree on a one-month temporary spending measure known on Capitol Hill as a continuing resolution, or shut down the government until funding can be agreed upon. U.S. Department of Homeland Security has removed Haiti, Belize, and Samoa from a list of countries whose citizens are eligible for temporary work visas in the U.S. The announcement comes a week after President Trump reportedly used vulgar, a verbal word that is, to describe Haiti, El Salvador, and the countries of Africa. Senior Zimbabwean opposition leader Roy Bennett, his wife, three others killed in a helicopter crash that happened in the U.S. state of New Mexico. It is unclear right now what Bennett was doing in New Mexico. This is VOA News. The Somalia National Guard and the Army killed at least seven Al-Shabaab militants and destroyed their base during an operation in the southern part of the country. One of their army generals told VOA Somali forces took control of a town about 45 kilometers south of the coastal city of Kismayo. The general said despite initial resistance, his forces managed to destroy several of the militants' bases. Spokesman for Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has warned opposition leader Raila Odinga not to carry out a plan to inaugurate himself as the people's president or form a rival government in exile. That story now from VOA's Daniel Scherf in Nairobi.
Kenya's presidential spokesman, Eric Karaithe, on Thursday responded to opposition leader Raila Odinga's threat to form a government in exile with a warning.
Acts against the Kenyan law, done either within or outside the country, will be treated accordingly.
Odinga's National Super Alliance has rejected the results of October's rerun election and defiantly pledged to inaugurate him as the people's president on January 30th. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Swahili service Tuesday, Odinga repeated the swearing-in plan and raised the possibility of forming a government. A press release from Odinga's political party, the Orange Democratic Movement, tried to walk back his comments on forming a government in exile. Kenya's attorney general warned in December that if Odinga declares himself president, it could be considered treason, a charge punishable by death. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Nairobi.
United States has reiterated its resolve to help local forces eliminate Islamic State fighters from Afghanistan and strongly refuted accusations Washington was behind the emergence of the terror group in the country. U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan John Bass, says the United States has no role in the emergence of the Islamic State, also known as Daesh, in Afghanistan.
Let me take this opportunity, since these rumors continue to circulate, to emphatically state that the United States has not brought Daesh to Afghanistan. The United States has not ever supported Daesh. Its creation, its horrible attacks in any form or fashion.
IS launched its operations in Afghanistan in early 2015 from eastern volatile Afghan regions, mainly Nangarhar province, bordering on Pakistan. Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com, and we're always available on the VOA mobile app.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, January 19th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's president wants elections in 4 to 5 months, but how realistic?
I don't think the situation on the ground is practical to have an uncontested election. Because if he has an election within 4 to 6 months, and a lot of things as demanded by the opposition is not yet into place.
That's Zimbabwean political analyst Dr. Wangu Manzoze. Meanwhile, millions of Zimbabweans in the diaspora say they want a chance to vote in the next election. A campaign to clean up Liberia's capital is underway in preparation for Monday's inauguration of George Weah. And Burundi's human rights record comes under critical review.
We are deeply troubled by continued restrictions on political and civic space from members of the opposition, independent media, and civil society. A credible electoral process cannot take place without improvements in the rights to freedom of peaceful assembly and association and freedom of expression.
Jason Mack is the head of the U.S. delegation to the UN Human Rights Council's Universal Periodic Review. Uganda President Museveni calls for death penalty for capital criminals, and Zambia's government defends the restart of the national airline. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa says he wants elections held within 4 to 5 months. If held, the elections will be the first since independence in 1980 without Robert Mugabe, who was forced to step down last year following a military intervention. Dr. Wangu Manzoze is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He says it would not be practical to have elections in 4 to 5 months because a lot of reforms demanded by the opposition, like a new electoral commission and a clean voter list, may not have been met.
Mr. Mnangagwa, in his new presidency, has tried to deviate from the norms of what we Zimbabweans have been accustomed to or used to, which was the culture of Mr. Mugabe. So now we believe, for his word, that it may be that elections will be held within 4 to 5 months, as he mentioned.
Do you think the president really, did he make this announcement in consultation with the opposition? Does Zimbabwe currently have any voter list?
That one, we cannot really call it an announcement because it was just an impromptu statement. Constitutionally and legally, he doesn't have to consult anybody. He doesn't have to consult the opposition parties, but he has to check the readiness of the electoral body, which everybody knows that it's more or less in shambles and the voter registration process isn't complete yet. So I don't think what he's saying and what he's obtaining on the ground has got a correlation.
You said constitutionally he doesn't have to consult, but the implications, what if those elections are not held in 4 to 5 months?
It's not yet gazetted to say that elections will be held in 4 to 5 months. He can still get away with it, but what I'm trying to say is that I don't think the situation on the ground is practical to have an uncontested election. Because if he has an election within 4 to 6 months, and a lot of things as demanded by the opposition is not yet into place, and even the practicality of the voters' role itself, nothing is really practical. So I don't think he can hold a free and fair election within 4 to 5 months.
So what exactly do you mean that you don't think the situation on the ground in Zimbabwe is practical for a contested election?
Okay, let me substitute contested for disputed. If he has elections within 4 to 5 months, it's going to be a disputed election as usual. So I don't think it's going to help his case since he's trying to cement his image and reputation into the international scene.
You mentioned some reforms that the opposition has been demanding. Do you think those have to be met before any meaningful election can be held in Zimbabwe?
That's my view too, that if he has got really nothing to hide, I don't see anything very wrong with meeting those demands, because some of the demands are very basic. To say that there needs to be transparency in the way voter information is captured, voter information is stored, the demilitarization of the electoral body. That's one issue that is so sticky. Because the problem is that intelligence and security services are too much involved. It's especially now, is no more about the military. And now it's actually fingers of political violence are being witnessed all over the country.
Dr. Manzoze, before I let you go, I wanted to know if you heard about the death of opposition leader Roy Bennett in this plane crash, and what's your view in remembrance of him?
Oh, my condolences to all the surviving family members, actually. I think I last met Roy Bennett in 2014, and he was a fine gentleman, a man who really believed in Zimbabwe, was so much proud of his family. And I want to say Zimbabwe, not just the opposition movement, has really lost a great asset in Roy Bennett, because he was an accomplished farmer, a man with great ideas, and it's so saddening.
Dr. Wangu Manzoze is a Zimbabwean political analyst. He was speaking with me from New York. Some Zimbabweans living outside their country have taken the government to court, seeking the diaspora's right to take part in planned elections. Chief Justice Luke Malaba has said the matter will be heard by a full bench at a date to be determined. Sebastian Mofu has more for VOA from Harare.
Ahead of a Thursday hearing at the Constitutional Court, visiting President Emmerson Mnangagwa told Zimbabweans in neighboring Mozambique to come home and register to vote in elections, which he said will be held in the next 5 months. But exiled Zimbabweans want to be able to vote from where they are. One of them is United Kingdom-based Ruvimbo Chigwedere, who is bitter that Mnangagwa's government says it has no money to help Zimbabweans vote.
We saw it coming. It will take a long time anyway. It's not about money. It is about my policies, and we are an enemy of the state, and that will take a long time to change. We're counted when it benefits, but when it comes to the proper benefit for us, we don't really matter.
Zimbabweans living abroad sent home about $750 million, according to Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe estimates. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights filed the petition to allow the diaspora to vote. Diplomats are the only Zimbabweans outside the country who can currently cast ballots. As many as 3 million people are left unable to vote. Zimbabwe Electoral Commission acting chairperson Emmanuel Magade says his organization is not to blame for that.
Our position as ZEC is that we would want every eligible Zimbabwean to vote, but everything has to be done in accordance with the law. As of now, people in the diaspora are ineligible to vote. It's incumbent, or it behoves upon the parliamentary parties to change the law. We are in servitude of the law. We'll follow the law dutifully and faithfully.
It remains to be seen whether parliament or the constitutional court will change the law in time for the next elections. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Ceremonies for Monday's inauguration of Liberia's President-elect George Mane Weah and his Vice President-elect Joe Howard Taylor begin today, Friday, with what the official protocol calls a taste of Liberia. Tomorrow, Saturday, will be a peace football match between Weah All-Stars and the Armed Forces of Liberia. Meanwhile, hundreds of volunteers, mostly young people from President-elect Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, have launched a campaign to voluntarily clean up the capital, Monrovia, in preparation for Monday's inauguration. Titi Jibril reports from Monrovia.
The CDC partisans flooded the party headquarters, chanting party slogans, some in their party regalia, ready to voluntarily clean up the city. Addressing the crowd, Party Youth League Chair Jefferson Kochi challenged the young people to be ready to sustain the campaign as part of their commitment to President-elect Weah.
So your first commitment to Ambassador Weah by the people, yes. That's why you said to him that you will sweep Maserati free. Yes. You sweep Maserati free. Yes. No money, pastors. Yes. No money. Let's do it a volunteer.
Volunteer!
They clean up campaign at two things. The first phase is to clean up before the inauguration.
Yes.
The second phase is to clean the entire country.
The cleanup campaign is expected to continue until tomorrow, Saturday. Volunteers have divided Monserrato County, where the capital, Monrovia, is located, into six zones. As many as 400 persons are assigned to each zone, depending on its size and the amount of work needed to be done to swash up the city. I asked some of the CDC partisans before they began the cleanup exactly what motivated them to undertake such a hectic task and for free, given the harsh economic situation in the country.
My children and my husband are nobody to help me, so I came to do the volunteer work. After everything, I can be able to find something to do.
Why have you decided to come and volunteer?
I love my country. I'm going to be clean.
We came to work because I just love the men.
Yeah.
I really need to work for the men to know that, yes, I get that love for you. I don't need gold, I don't need diamond, I don't need nothing. I only want free work.
Yes. Why have you decided to come and volunteer to work?
Yeah, because I'm a party. I'm going to work for them.
How old are you?
I'm 59 years old.
With hundreds, if not thousands, of guests and visitors expected in Liberia for President-elect Weah's inauguration, and given the poor sanitation problems of Monrovia and its suburbs, many say the spirit of volunteerism to clean the city is welcomed. But they hope it can be sustained, perhaps through a program initiated by the incoming WIA administration. For VOA Daybreak Africa News, I'm Titi Jibro reporting from Monrovia, Liberia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 19th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Member states participating in a UN review of Burundi's human rights record have accused the Central African government of wide-scale abuse, including extrajudicial killings, torture, sexual violence, and the repression of freedom of expression. Burundi is one of 14 states under examination by the UN Human Rights Council's Universal Periodic Review. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the meeting in Geneva.
This is the third time Burundi has been examined under the Universal Periodic Review, a unique process that scrutinizes the human rights records of all 193 UN member states. As a veteran of the practice, Burundi was well prepared to present its human rights situation in a good light and to deflect criticism of its actions. Martin Nivyabandi, Burundi's Minister of Human Rights, Social Affairs and Gender, described the progress in his country since its last UN review in 2013. Nivyabandi said major reforms have been made to promote and protect human rights, including addressing human trafficking, protecting victims of gender violence, and reducing prison overcrowding. He fended off criticism of impunity by noting many bills have been passed to prevent such action. He said steps are being taken to make sure victims of human rights violations receive assistance. He spoke through an interpreter.
We've set up a department providing legal aid, not providing access to a lawyer so much as providing advice on and orienting individuals, and to make sure that a defense is guaranteed and make sure that everybody's rights are upheld.
Not everyone was persuaded by the arguments. The head of the U.S. delegation, Jason Mack, expressed dismay at the continued threats against U.N. personnel by government officials and ruling party members.
We are deeply troubled by continued restrictions on political and civic space from members of the opposition, independent media, and civil society. A credible electoral process cannot take place without improvements in the rights to freedom of peaceful assembly and association and freedom of expression.
Burundi has suspended all cooperation and collaboration with the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. It also has refused to grant access to the UN Commission of Inquiry to investigate rights abuses. Many member states at the hearing called on Burundi to reverse these decisions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is calling for stricter measures for those criminals sentenced for capital offenses. President Museveni says those sentenced for crimes such as murder should be subjected to the death penalty by execution. Mugumi Davis-Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
While officiating at the graduation of prison wardens here in Kampala yesterday, President Museveni says such a punishment will help prevent criminals.
I have not been hanging these people, but I think being too lenient is also becoming a problem. But the criminals, I think that they have a right to kill people and then just keep their own heads. So I think I'm going to revise a bit and hang a few.
According to Uganda's constitution, the president must sign an order for a convicted criminal to be executed. There haven't been any executions in Uganda since 2005, but President Museveni said that an era of tolerance is over.
If you see the way they kill people, they are really, they need a lesson. We have been too soft. I think they have misunderstood it.
Crimes that warrant death penalty in Uganda include murder, aggravated robbery, rape, terrorism-related offenses, as well as treason. Members of the Uganda Army, the Uganda People's Defense Forces, or UPDF, can be sentenced to death for cowardice in action. Dozens of people, mainly women, were mysteriously and brutally murdered in some parts of Kampala and Wakiso districts last year. Livingstone Sewanyana, the chairman of Uganda Human Rights Board, calls the president's comments unfortunate. Sewanyana says death penalty is an inhuman and degrading form of punishment that does not deter crime. He says the government must improve the judiciary if it is to reduce the high crime rates in the country.
There are many reasons why we are experiencing the rampant murders in different parts of the country, which need to be seriously addressed. Among these is the ineffectiveness of the police in apprehending criminals, its weaknesses in investigations, and also what we call here mafias, people who do not respect the rule of law.
In Uganda, those exonerated from death penalty by law are usually minors who are under the age of 18 at the time of crime, pregnant women, mentally ill, and those intellectually disabled. There are more than 160 death row inmates in Uganda today. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The leader of Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, has rejected a cabinet decision to revive the defunct national carrier Zambia Airways. Hakainde Hichilema says the revival of the national airline, which has been obsolete since 1994, will be a waste of public resources. Civil society and other opposition groups have also condemned the cabinet decision. VOA's Peter Clotty asked the Zambian Information Minister Kapamba Mulenga for the government reaction.
Cabinet did approve that we do resuscitate the national airline. And of course, this will be done by a shareholding deal between Ethiopian Airlines and Zambian Airways. And of course, the shareholdings will be 55% for Zambian Airways and 45% for Zambian Airways. Of course, as soon as all the paperwork is done, we will get the airline running. And of course, we do hope that by doing this through the partnership and revamping the airline, will enable the traveling public in Zambia and the Southern Africa region to enjoy greater connectivity options. And of course, this is a great opportunity for the flow of investment, trade, contribution to socioeconomic growth, and of course, tourism.
How economically viable is this? And wouldn't this be a waste of taxpayers' money, as being suggested by some people in Zambia?
Why would development be a waste of taxpayers' money? We are trying to create an aviation hub in the southern region because we don't have our national airline. So why would a national airline be a waste of taxpayers' money?
They are suggesting yes, that Zambia has survived for years since 1994 without a national airline, and that the previous national airline was a drain on the national coffers, and that is why it went defunct. Why resuscitate something that is not
that
viable?
That is why, my dearest brother, this is a partnership. The national airline failed in the past. It didn't fail in the PF government. And look, this is the new age, and we have made a lot of strides in terms of development and in terms of infrastructure. We are putting up the new airport. So wouldn't it be best that we had our own airline? These are some of the achievements, our goals. And these are just calls out from our enemies who are afraid that PF has delivered so much in a very short period of time.
Hakainde Hichilema, the main opposition leader, said that this is a waste of taxpayers' money.
When we
we put up infrastructure, he says it's a waste of money. So what will not be a waste of money for him? So then when he governs, what would he do for the people of Zambia?
Ms. Kapamba, his argument is that the people pushing for the restart of the Zambia Airways are only interested in serving their selfish interests, and that this will be a drain on the national coffers. What's your reaction to that?
I will tell you that the opposition leader, Akai Echilema, said the roads have been an interest to government. Yes, the roads are an interest to the government because this is a government that is committed to ensuring that it delivers on the promises of the people. We want our people to benefit in terms of socio-economic. We want our people to benefit in terms of the tourism benefits. So why wouldn't we not be interested?
Kapamba Mulinga is Zambia's information minister. She spoke with VOA's Peter Clote from the capital, Lusaka. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the latest FIFA ranking as Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, Tanzania and Sudan have all moved up the ladder in the latest FIFA monthly ranking released on Thursday. Tunisia replaced Senegal at the top of the FIFA rankings for Africa. Though both sides are going to this year's World Cup in Russia, the Senegalese had ended 2017 as Africa's highest ranked team. CHAN 2018 qualifiers, Sudan are the biggest movers, rising 12 places to position 124th, while Ethiopia has gone up 6 steps to 137th. And now to updates from the ongoing 2018 African Nations Championship in Morocco. Zambia claimed a 2-0 win over Ivory Coast in the team's Group B encounter on Thursday evening to book their place in the knockout rounds. Augustin Mulenga scored a goal in each half at the Marrakesh Stadium to see the Chipolopolo entrench themselves at the top of the pool on 6 points, while the Elephants sink to the foot of the table after successive defeats. Angola are gunning for their first win in the ongoing 2018 CAF African Nations Championship Tournament as they meet Cameroon at the Stade Adar on Saturday afternoon. Libya will face off with Nigeria in a Group C encounter later today. Media officer of the Super Eagles, Tony Mbitue, says... the Super Eagles will not underrate the Libyans.
We are focused on Friday's game. People shouldn't underrate Libya. You see, the smaller nations that do not have big players in Europe have an advantage in a tournament like this. Don't also forget that Libya won the 2014 edition in South Africa. And Libya have most of these boys during the World Cup qualifying games. During the Nations Cup qualifying game. So they are a very good team.
We're still with Nigeria as the Nigerian Football Federation has revealed an ambitious pre-World Cup program expected to boost the country's determination to surpass previous marks at the Mundial scheduled to hold in Russia this summer. The Super Eagles are to play 6 friendlies starting with the games against Poland on March 23rd. Amaju Pinnick is the president of the Nigerian Football Federation.
Match against Poland on the 23rd of March. We'll be playing against Poland. We are aware that Poland is a very high rated team and it's a very good preparatory game for the World Cup. Immediately after that, we return to London to play against Serbia. We're going to be playing Serbia in London on the 27th of March. Then after that, we, of course, the first phase of camping will commence on the 22nd of May in Abuja. And the Super Eagles will be camping in the Hilton Hotel.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa said he wants elections held within 4 to 5 months. If held, the elections will be the first since independence in 1980 without Robert Mugabe, who was forced to step down last year following a military intervention. And that's it for this Friday, January 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Barty, wishing you a good weekend.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. and our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.